Dr. Kellerstein is absolutely one of my favorite homeopathic educators and practitioners in the community. I've had the good fortune of being able to observe him actually in a clinic, following up with maybe about 8 or 9 different cases. And what was astounding to me about it was just how pretty much everyone was doing better. And it wasn't subtle. It was like everyone was doing dramatically better on all levels, mentally, emotionally. Their energy level had been picked up. Their physical symptoms were improving with very dramatic changes in each case. But what really impressed me, aside from the fact that he's such an excellent prescriber, was that he was really able to explain how he came up with the remedy, and his students were able to come up with the remedies themselves. And that's always, to me, the sign of somebody who's a gifted teacher, when they can take their own knowledge, their own artistic ability to practice homeopathy, and they can transfer that to other individuals. And this is something that is very rare and unique, and something that Dr. Kellerstein really embodies in his teaching of homeopathy. So, Joe, before we actually start the course, can you just quickly tell us, are you offering some courses now? If people want to study with you, or where can they?
Well, yes, we are. I'm offering a course. The course itself is called Homeopathy by the book referring to the Organon. And we are offering courses. We have a 2-year program available for people with some prior homeopathic training, 7 weekends a year, 2 years. We have a website, Homeopathy by the Book. We're having some difficulty posting on it the last couple of weeks, but the contact information for myself or Monica Frohman is there. If anybody's interested, please contact us and we can take it from there.
Is there an email or a phone number that people can use?
Yes, you can contact me directly at jokel@interlog.com, which is my email address. I have my office phone number, which is here in Canada. It's area code 905-433-8666. And we can take it from there as well.
Thank you so much. And again, if you've never seen Dr. Kellerstein speak, if you really can get the opportunity to do so, you will be absolutely amazed. He is a very, very gifted instructor and a very gifted homeopath. Well, again, Joe, thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to just start by just reading the first case. It reads as follows. A mail carrier, that's a mailman, a mail carrier, not a M-A-L-E, but a M-A-I-L carrier, of 45, strained the inner side of the right knee by a twist of the foot outward. He was compelled to rest it for 4 weeks, making a partial recovery, after which he resumed work. Soon after that, he had an attack of pneumonia and rested it some more, but the lameness continued to interfere with his work, so he consulted an orthopedist of note. Split cartilage with fluid in the joint was the verdict of the x-ray. Operation was urged. As occasionally happens when a patient is confronted with what seems to him an emergency, the homeopath was consulted. Now here are the following. The symptoms of the case were as follows. The knee pains and gives way when descending stairs or walking on rough or soft ground. So the knee pains and gives way when descending stairs or walking on rough or soft ground. And sometimes the knee bends backwards sharply while walking. Also, the pain is worse from any jar or unwanted motion, and as well the joint feels dry. Now, this is a case from an old homeopathic journal known as the Homeopathic Recorder, and this case came out in 1950. Before we open it up, Joe, is there anything that you'd like to say about the case or any comments you'd like to make?
Well, I'd like to make a comment in general, Kim. You know, we're all familiar with aphorism 153, where Hahnemann talks to us about how we're to individualize the case, what we're to look for. But this is kind of where the rubber hits the road. You know, we need to develop flexibility in our thinking. We need to be able to model on the successful prescribing of practitioners of the past, especially our pioneers. That's why I especially choose the old journals, much more in a strict Hahnemannian tradition. And I also like it when cases are bite-sized. You know, For learning purposes, we have a short case. We can study it from the medical perspective. We can study it from the perspective of rubrics, of materia medica, and we can revolve around and around, and it's just a gold mine, a veritable gold mine of discussion and information. So let's get going.
Joe, before we do that, I know I totally agree with you, and I really like these little cases from the journals. Are there any specific journals that you could recommend that would be particularly, that would contain a particular excellent collection of cases?
Oh, of course. EH has the wonderful collection of just start with the homeopathic recorders and the IHA, the Organon, the Hahnemannian Monthly. All of these old journals had the finest prescribers, and there are many more. They're just not coming to mind now. The first thing we need to do when we look at a case is we read it and we reread it until we're real familiar with the facts. The biggest mistake in any kind of thought process is trying to rush yourself. We read through the case, find the facts, and we see, well, what are the facts? What can we isolate here as symptoms, which are pure symptoms of pain? A strain has occurred on the inner side of the right knee. We know that it occurred through a twisting of the foot outward. Okay? So soon after, he had an attack of pneumonia. Then the author describes it as lameness. Lameness is a very interesting symptom. Lameness is actually, Kim, what do you think that means? What is lameness?
Well, I understand that to mean that it's kind of like it's kind of withering and it's not moving and it's not functioning any longer.
See, lameness is actually different from atrophy, and lameness is a kind of inability to use a part, normally owing to pain or weakness. So, in this case, we can see that he's got an injury, and he went to see an orthopedist. We have a split cartilage with fluid in the joint was the verdict of the X-ray, and operation was urged. Well, there's something there that needs some comment. Films don't really show soft tissue. I don't know how a film could show a split cartilage. Although you can see some soft tissue swelling, an X-ray cannot diagnose split cartilage. That would be a clinical verification through examination. And then, of course, we have the actual symptoms. Now, these were the symptoms that the homeopath is indicating to us he based his prescribing on. And here we have his first symptom. Usually, or often, they're given in order of importance to the prescriber. So we have the knee pains and gives way when descending stairs or walking on rough or soft ground. Sometimes the knee bends backward sharply. The pain is worse from jar. The joint feels dry. So those are the facts, more or less, as they're separated. So Hahnemann calls on us now to say, all right, so what do we find out? What in this entire landscape is especially characteristic? If we had to create a foreground and a background using this whole situation, is that what stands out to us? What sufferings or what aspects of the suffering would we necessarily want to put in the foreground? What do we want to use as our leading symptoms in this case? That's how we generally approach a case. So what do people think out there? Any ideas?
I would say the lameness, the fact that the injury didn't come back in full after 4 or 5 weeks. And so I'm not sure how I'd want to put that, but I'm thinking the inability to do stairs and the...
So that goes to the intensity and the duration of the lameness, I agree, and also the time it takes to recover. That is quite striking.
How would you rubric that?
Well, Kim, is there a rubric for lameness?
There is, sure.
Well, I think we'd start there. The fact that it took so long would, I think, go to intensity. Don't you agree? And the fact that it kept him off work, too, goes to intensity. So that's the consistency, the intensity of the injury. So we have lameness. What next?
Everybody knows that that would be under extremities lameness.
Yep.
Well, the modality of the worst descending stairs seems like a, you know,
modalities are really important.
Yeah, and do you notice how is it worse descending stairs?
Well, the pain and the weakness, and it, you know, I think that was what it said. It was the pain.
Any jarring, any unwanted movement.
Yes,
jarring.
Yes, yes.
And it gives way going downstairs.
So any unwanted motion or jar, you know, it sort of lends itself to the gives us the idea of instability in the joint, the holding elements of the joint itself. So far, we've got this idea of lameness that's quite intense. We have something around the knee with weakness, giving way when descending stairs or when walking on rough ground. We have those general ideas and the aggravation from jar or unwanted motion. We have.
I'd like to add one more, Joe, which I thought was kind of funny, which was the joints feeling dry.
Yes, the joint feeling dry, dryness in the joint. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yes, I forgot. Wonderful. So we have those symptoms. So let's take it in order. What are we going to do with this idea of the knee paining and giving way when descending stairs? How will we do that in the repertory? Any ideas out there?
Weakness knees worth descending.
Good, good.
Any
other
ideas?
Are there any other rubrics we might consult?
We'll say that one again.
It's, I believe, weakness of the knees descending.
And there's lameness knees descending.
Wonderful. What else might there be?
Those extremities, pain, knee descending.
Good. Anything else?
Dryness, joint.
Well, no, let's stick with the descending. Let's finish one thing, one idea, and then we'll move on.
There's also extremities, lameness of the knee. It doesn't include the modality, but it does have the lameness.
Okay, there's also a rubric. Oh, I'm sorry. Was there a question there that I missed?
No, but I wanted to make a comment, which is, Joe, if I was going to use both extremities, weakness, knees descending, and extremities, lameness, knees descending, especially because the lameness one only has one remedy, I would probably combine those two rubrics to make one rubric out of them.
Kim, you're reading my mind. That's exactly where I was headed. But, you know, I wanted to gather all the possibilities.
Okay,
so. There are other rubrics that I wanted to gather up. You know, for example, there is extremities descending stairs aggravates lower limbs. Not even in the pain section.
There's also awkwardness lower limbs descending stairs.
Interesting. I didn't know about that one. Thank you. We're generating some ideas. I love this. This is exactly what we need. So we're gathering ideas. You know, Boininghausen, of course, was a master of telling us we needed to generalize symptoms, that homeopathy needed to be an art of an inclusiveness of each idea. We can save the exclusiveness, the limiting, for the end. So all of these rubrics we're talking about, you know, we could gather together. This is one of the great facilities of the computer and one of the great facilities of being able to create cross-references when we need them in the computer program. But Kim is the expert in teaching about that. So we have that. We also have, there's another rubric just to bring it up. Not only do we have generality just in extremities, not in the pain section, but extremities, we have ascending stairs lower limb aggravates as well as descending. And just to promote it further and going to another aspect of the case, we also have in the generalities section, in generalities, we have, I think it's, is it ground or walking on rough ground? Walking. Walking over rough ground aggravates. Unfortunately, only five remedies. But I wanted, you see how just studying one thing can lead us to all these branch points in the repertory. And all of this leads us to a broader knowledge of repertory. We peruse the remedies and we come back. All right. Are people satisfied with having covered that? We can add all those rubrics together. And we can see, we can create a super rubric around that idea. So we have the lameness. We have the concept of the lameness or the weakness with pain on descending the stairs. rough ground is kind of, you know, it's interesting, but only five remedies. Initially, that might be a little exclusive. The walking over rough ground aggravates, we might include, but I wouldn't be exclusive around it.
So you're saying you would combine all those into one big rubric?
Yep.
Okay. So how it sounds finally? 1, 2, 3. Extremities, this is the rubric number 1. Extremities, weakness, descending. Extremities, lemonies. Extremities, walking on the soft ground.
Yes.
Extremities, any jar. Extremities, unwanted motion.
Yes.
All that together in one.
You can use, yes.
And the same list under the rubric pain comes again.
Yep.
So one rubric is extremities, another one is pain. And what would be the third one? Sensation, knee, dry.
Yes.
Okay.
So initially we have the idea of lameness. I'm sorry, I couldn't clearly hear all the rubrics you were saying, but initially we have the idea of the lameness.
Uh-huh.
Then we have the idea of the giving way when descending the stairs.
Uh-huh.
Then we have the idea we can use the dryness of the joint. We can also use generalities. Jar aggravates.
The dryness comes under extremities or under sensation?
I believe it's under extremities dryness, subrubric joints, but that's a guess. Let me go there and see.
So may I ask you a question, please?
Please.
It's not very clear to me. Are you geared towards Kent-like repertorization or a Bunninghausen-like repertorization? Once this will be cleared, then what kind of repertory are you using?
Right now, I'm using synthesis and radar. And in terms of following a particular style of repertorization, I don't believe I follow any particular style. I'm trying to adapt what I do to the case at hand. Homeopathy, in its essence, is not a question of stylization or adherence to any particular thinking guru, although we use their ideas at times. You know, at times everybody's idea is useful depending upon the case. But here what I'm doing is I'm saying, okay, I want to use an inductive, inclusive approach. That's my basis. I want to capture the idea, first, of lameness. Secondly, the idea of the descending aggravates. Then I'd like to see about the jar aggravates, and then I'll see where it leads me. Now, in fact, repertorization, remember, repertorization never gives you a remedy. Repertorization leads you to a probability list that you can study. Only when you get that really good, Andre used to call it, a gut-pleasing feeling about reading in a good Materia Medica, one of the old, really good Materia Medicas, that's when you select the remedy. Not before.
Dr. Telesign?
Yes.
Excuse me, can you give me those five remedies for walking on rough ground? Because I only have two.
Oh, let me just go to there. So, generalities, walking, rough ground aggravates. I have five remedies here. Clematis, Hyos, Lilium tigrinum, phosphorus, podophyllum.
Thank you very much.
All in ones. So again, it's not a convincing rubric, is it?
No, but it's something to have on hand.
Always. All information is good. Nothing is completely exclusive. For those of you who've repertorized, does anything come up very strongly in terms of intensity that makes sense to your knowledge of Materia Medica?
Bryonia.
Anything else? That's good. Let's keep it in mind. Bryonia. What else?
Ruda.
Ruda. Very good. What else?
Rustox.
Rustox. Very good. Anything else?
Belladonna. I wouldn't think of belladonna, but it does come up high in the repertorization.
Belladonna. Great. Okay, we can stop there. So let's let's play a game that that I used to play that I play a lot with my students, and that was that I learned a lot with while I was doing my training at the Canadian Academy. And the game is this. Who would like to argue for belladonna? Who would like to be the lawyer to argue for belladonna?
I will say belladonna.
All right. Go ahead. Let's argue for belladonna. What points in the case really remind you of belladonna?
The jarring. Jarring and any movement.
Excellent. Okay, so let me ask you, what else is here that would be highly characteristic of belladonna?
Acute onset, like it comes like a...
So do we have evidence in the case of sudden onset?
No.
Not of the whole situation.
But what about this joint?
Sudden onset and pneumonia.
Soon, but not necessarily sudden. Soon after that, he had an attack of pneumonia, not suddenly. So, and with belladonna, let's ask this. You know, we have a right to expect some things in a major polycrest, especially. What would we like to see to really convince us this was a belladonna case?
Redness, swelling.
Throbbing.
Throbbing.
Do we have it?
Nope.
Intensity.
No. So without the redness, the heat, the throbbing, the sudden onset, and especially the violence of belladonna, we might have a belladonna case, but the probability diminishes with the absence of each of those really characteristic features. So we can't throw it out, but let's hold it at bay for a moment. What was the next remedy? Bryonia. Who would like to argue for bryonia?
I'll say the second because that also hates movement.
Okay, well, what have we got that's highly characteristic of bryonia?
And
irritability.
Where's the irritability?
We don't have it. Well, we don't know.
Okay, what else would we like to see in bryonia?
Dryness.
Right, and we have it, don't we?
Yeah.
What else would we like to see?
Aggravated by jarring.
Aggravated from jar.
Or any kind of motion.
The key in bryonia is that when you get a lovely case of bryonia, and of course, you know, we don't always get classic cases of any remedy, but when we get a nice case of bryonia, what we'd really love to see is slight motion creates a huge pain, like a really disproportionate sharp pain to small motion. Do we have that?
No.
No. So you see, we're disappointed a little there. The jar is good. The dryness is good. Again, we're not going to throw it away, but it's something we consider. So who would like to argue for, what was the other one, Ruta?
Can I ask about the dryness?
Yeah, what would you like to ask?
It's contradictory. We have both. The joint feels dry to the patient, but the x-ray is showing excess fluid.
You know what? That's a great point. There might be room to think about which rubric there. Which rubric could we consider in that contradictory case?
Ignatia.
Not which remedy, which rubric?
Sensation of dryness alternating with swelling or fluid?
Well, maybe, but we don't know about alternation. That rubric would suggest one sensation alternating with another. But here, if we have a joint feels dry, but in fact is blown up with fluid, we might, if we could find other corroborating evidence, look for the rubric contradictory and alternating symptoms in the generalities chapter, which covers this kind of situation where you have a contradiction in fact and sensation or just a contradictory situation. Was there a further question about bryonia?
No, that was it.
Okay. So who would like to argue for Ruta?
I would.
Go ahead.
Well, one of the things that I think we sort of omitted was the causation, which is the sprain. So the lameness after sprains and the straining of the joint, the overexertion of the joint, the twisting, and the knees giving way on descending or ascending is very characteristic of Ruta, particularly because of the causation. We have a good reason to think about Ruta.
So the causation and that one particular symptom.
Well, the lameness after spraining.
I'm sorry, say again?
We have a causation of a sprain joint, and then we have the lameness after the sprain.
Very good.
And then the giving way of the joint, this is this peculiar weakening of the joint, that it gives way when descending. This is characteristic of Ruta also.
Yes, it is. Excellent. How do people feel about that?
It's joy.
Do you notice the difference in how you feel between an examination of the different remedies? I want you to think about your body sense of how it feels when you recollect over that. Because indeed, the remedy is Ruta. Ruta was given and cured the case beautifully. We can go over it, and there's more to it than that, although that was a beautiful exposition of the reasons for it. Ruta also has the symptom, phthisis after trauma. Look at what we've got here. After a traumatic injury, soon after he got pneumonia. Ruta has that kind of severe lower respiratory infection post-trauma. So there's another indication. The interesting thing is, in the repertory, for a lot of the pains in the knee on descending, Ruta won't be in the rubrics. Ruta is a fascinating remedy. The way I especially led you to include Ruta in the rubrics was to use generalities, or rather extremities, descending aggravates. Ruta is present in the general rubrics for sprain, but in very few of the rubrics regarding pains in the knee. It's there for weakness. It's very interesting. So I investigated this further and found, what does Kent say about Ruta? Now, Kent says that Ruta is a remedy extraordinarily difficult to classify its symptoms. What does that mean coming from the guy who put the repertory together? It means that very often we won't be able to repertorize Ruta. We must know its materia medica. So Ruta with the extremities is a lot like Rustox. Kent says it belongs to the same class of cases as Rustox. That is, it's somewhat better from continued motion. There's a great degree of restlessness with soreness in Ruta. The predominant pain is aching and bruising. It's worse from cold, better from warm. A lot like Rustox, eh? One of the interesting differentials that I wanted to bring up before we move on to the next case is that Ruta especially affects areas where the bone is thinly covered. The wrist, the ankle, the knee, many joints. Ruta also has a fascinating symptom in sciatica, where the patient complains that the pain feels as if it's coming from deep in the marrow of the bone. The last thing I wanted to bring up about the materia medica of Ruta is that, it just slipped my mind, is what? Yes, is the slowness of onset of the pain in the pruvers. Now, because of that, I want you to think of when a patient comes to you and has had a traumatic episode that might be a sprain to a major joint or a wrist or an ankle, but the pain came on 4, 5, 6 days, a week, 10 days after the injury, so that the injury is almost forgotten. Think of Ruta. I've made lots of cures on that symptom. Where the person says to you, I really worked this joint about a week ago, but it's been fine, and it's only been recently that this horrible aching pain came on. So you can see how a case might lead you to a major study of many aspects of repertory, materia medica, and even philosophy. Any questions about that?
So Ruta is characteristic for pain going away quickly?
No. A patient will say, you know, my injury, I fell down 10 days ago, 5 days ago, but I had no pain. I was fine. I got up. I felt nothing. And it was only last night I couldn't sleep. That same area started to act up and become very painful. That is a keynote for Ruta, where the origin, the traumatic origin of the injury, is almost forgotten. Okay, let's move on to the next case.
All right, so I'll read the next case. So this is a case from the IHA, which is the International Hanumanian Association Transactions, and the case reads as follows. A man, 75 years old, much emaciated but of nervous temperament, had dysentery for 3 weeks. The aggravation was from 4 p.m. to 4 a.m., the straining and tenesmus violent, rectum and hemorrhoidal tumors protrude constantly when he is urged to evacuate. Discharges consisted principally of pus, blood, and mucus, with occasional very small pieces of feces. The skin was dry, tongue was coated, the thirst was moderate, the pains in the bowels were very moderate. The most carefully selected remedies had but a very short effect in relieving the patient. He had been given something in single doses in various potencies and in water, but it did no permanent good. So the case goes on to say, now what? Assume that it is tubercular and give tuberculinum, or syphilitic and give syphilinum, or since it is an acute disease, dig up the taproot of all this error, the germ from which others seem to have grown, and say, when carefully selected remedies have failed to produce a favorable effect, especially in acute diseases, give sulfur. Surely there never was more justification for such work than here, for this was Lippe's case, and that peerless prescriber says, the most carefully selected remedies had but a very short effect in relieving him. Did Lippe, this is Adolf Lippe, did Lippe give sulfur or anozode? No, the question with him, as with every true homeopath, was, what are the symptoms? The symptoms, and they alone must decide. A further search of the materia medica led to the curative remedy, as it will ever do if we persist in our efforts. Something was given and effected a prompt and permanent cure. What would have been the result had sulfur or anozode been given? Lippe and Bunninghausen did not practice homeopathy that way.
Okay. So we have somebody philosophizing and saying at the bottom end, don't prescribe on general principles, especially early on in a case. Look for what is specifically there and do the legwork. That's basically what they're saying. We have a man who is 75, who is emaciated but nervous, and he has dysentery, very severe illness, dysentery. Aggravation, 4 p.m. to 4 a.m., violent straining, hemorrhoidal tumors protrude constantly when he is urged to evacuate. The discharges consisted principally of pus, blood, and mucus, small pieces of feces. The skin was dry, the tongue was coated. Thirst moderate, pain in the bowels moderate. That seems to be most of our cases. So what symptoms, what rubrics might we consider here?
The pain is moderate.
Pain moderate. Pain not great.
Yeah. If you can be used a painless diarrhea in that case.
Ah. Pain in the bowels moderate. It doesn't mean that the pain in the rectum was not severe. Tenesmus violent.
Uh-huh.
Straining and tenesmus violent.
Right.
Also, it's not quite painless. Is it? It's just moderate pain.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it's definitely there, and there were definitely pains, and straining and tenesmus were violent. That's very uncomfortable. That is still painful. But the pain there is in the rectum, because tenesmus is an involuntary contraction, right? So what rubrics might we use still? But that's a good thought. I'm glad you brought it up. Everything counts.
Well, I'll just jump in since no one's volunteering. I'll let people think about it. But
could I ask one question, Kim, before you jump
sure,
in?
Sure, go ahead.
To me, you know, one of the most characteristic modalities we have is the time modality, because I guess what's confusing to me sometimes in a case like this is, you know, you think about, well, what's characteristic of dysentery? And a lot of this is characteristic, you know, the pus, the blood, the mucus, the straining, and the tenesmus. So I guess I would put more weight on the time modality to begin with, because that's characteristic of when it really bothers him.
Yeah, you know, the author here included the time modality, and he wouldn't have included it had it not been very reliable in the case. And you're absolutely right. When you have a reliable time modality, a kind of rhythmic time inference of the disease, it is by definition extremely characteristic of the case. So yeah, The 4 p.m. to 4 a.m. is extremely characteristic here. I totally agree. What else have we got?
Well, the fact of the straining and tenesmus is described.
Right. Violent tenesmus.
Violent.
What else have we got? Just go down the list in order.
Hemorrhoidal protrusion.
Exactly. So the hemorrhoids protrude with urging, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And this, in general, a mind-wise is a nervous temperament.
Right. We have nervous temperament. And we also have the stool. Stool can be a very good symptom. I don't know if it is here, but we should always consider it. And the stool here is principally pus and blood and mucus.
Yeah.
To me, that's quite strange. Although dysentery is a violent, often bacterial disease, so we can expect it. But mostly pus and blood and only occasional pieces of stool. What's next? We've got skin dry and tongue-coated. Okay? And that's the case. So what do we do here for rubrics? Let's start at the top. The most characteristic symptom, the one we'd really like to see, is an aggravation from 4 p.m. to 4 a.m. Do any remedies have that? Is that anywhere in our repertory?
You'd have to look in generals under time aggravation status.
So if we look at, if we look there, let me go there right now. So we have generals.
That's 16.
Do I look under time? How do I do this?
Well, you could go generals afternoon.
Timetable, yes. So 4 p.m. would be what?
1600.
16?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just go... generalities. Okay.
But you don't have that. I mean, both are characteristic when it starts and when it stops. You know, it's that time frame.
So what we do is we have a whole group of remedies that seem to be starting at 1600 hours, right?
Right.
And then we have, there's one remedy there that goes from 1600 to 4, right? What's the remedy?
Surya.
We have a group of remedies that start at 4, but I want to save us some time because we're running out of time. The remedy's not in either of those rubrics. What do we do?
Well, can I the rubric that I looked up right away, was, it's not exactly identical, but, you know, I've always been a little bit lax about exact times with things like this, is dysentery at night.
Ooh, lovely. So Kim has just uncovered something for us. I mean, most of us know to look under diarrhea, but to actually look under a rubric for dysentery. Where is that located, Kim?
It's under rectum, dysentery, night.
Rectum. Dysentery. Night. Very interesting. But does that cover all of it? Because it says 4 p.m. to 4 a.m. A good hunk of it in there. But technically in the repertory, when does nighttime begin?
After midnight?
10 o'clock, right?
9.
So if we also have dysentery in the afternoon. So dysentery, we've got early morning and night, nothing in the middle. So... although that's true, it doesn't totally cover the case, but that's an excellent find, Kim. Good for you. So what else can we do here? What are the next symptoms?
Coated tongue.
Coated tongue. Can we do anything with that?
Mouth.
We don't know what color the tongue is coated with or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And if you look under tongue discoloration, what do we do with that?
If you look under mouth-coated tongue, there's 162 symptoms, so it's too broad range of a rubric to use, really.
Exactly. Now, we can look under stool, and the stool consisted of what?
Mucus and blood.
Okay. So how do we find pus in the stool? Where is that located in the repertory?
Stool purulent.
Right. Wonderful. Okay, stool purulent. What about
bloody?
Bloody. Where do we find that? Is that just stool bloody?
Yes.
That's a huge rubric, though.
Too big, though.
bloody. Well, let's look inside the rubric.
Streaks. Froggy.
We have streaks, do we? Streaks are pretty distinct.
Pure blood.
Okay, well, stool bloody. So 251 remedies. Let's not spit at everything. We got
There's also stool mucus bloody.
Stool mucus bloody. That's not bad.
That's smaller.
Okay, we'll add that. And what about, can we do anything with the small pieces of stool?
You do small quantity. Stool small quantity.
We could. Small quantity. Anything else under stool that might do that?
Scanty.
We could, we can do stool scanty. Really, yeah, that's about it. I was thinking stool crumbling. But I don't know how good that is either, because that sort of is more a natrum muriaticum symptom, where the stool comes out and as it hits the water, it crumbles into flakes or just breaks. So, no, that wouldn't be good. So, we're kind of stuck there.
So, if we want to make sure we repertorize the tenesmus, because it's very violent.
The tenesmus?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Where are we going to find that?
Rectum pain tenesmus.
Excellent.
We don't really know from the case whether it was before, during, or after the stool, so
there's one that says pain tenesmus dysentery during.
Exactly.
The same thing applies for the hemorrhoids that protrude.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Hemorrhoids that protrude.
There's a rubric for that during stool with 34 remedies. The other ones after or... Yeah, the other one would be after stool. There's only one remedy there.
Well, that's excellent. It's during or after. We can combine them both. All right. Anything else? Well, what remedies are coming up?
Merc, sulfur, mercore,
lycopodium.
I got arsenicum, too.
Okay, that's excellent. So, Kim, what was the first remedy given in this case?
Well, yeah, I could tell it's Mercurius coryceus.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The first remedy given in this case by a great prescriber was Mercurius coryceus. He struggled with it just as you did. Then he had to go to the Materia Medica for the minutiae of the case. And he found in the Materia Medica something that our repertory really hasn't given us yet, and that is that symptom from the 4 p.m. to the 4 a.m. And that is found, you know, in terms of Materia Medica, the only Materia Medica I could find it in, well, aside from this particular case, was in Pulford's Graphic Drug Pictures. It wasn't even in Bell's Diarrhea, which is our classic. 4 p.m. to the 4 a.m. is under a tiny remedy called Trombidium. Now, Trombidium is a remedy, and in fact, I know we're running out of time, right, Kim?
Yeah, we're going to have to finish up with this case, but go ahead.
Okay, so I just wanted to say Trombidium is a remedy that has all of those symptoms with the dysentery, and Kim was absolutely right. And the only other thing I wanted to point out in the repertory was that if you go back to the dysentery section and you look under tongue-coated white with dysentery, Trombidium was one of only a few remedies, and yes, the dysentery at night was something that is, you know, partially appropriate. Had you used those two rubrics, you would have come up with Trombidium. But very difficult until you know the Materia Medica. Another reason why just going through these cases is so vitally important. We can see, hey, I could never have arrived at this using my regular repertorizing strategies. How could I have repertorized this? Okay, so Kim points out that rubric. I point out the dysentery rubric. You've learned something about the structure of repertory and how to mine for gold in it. So I'll cut it off right there, Kim. We have to stop.
We should let them know what Trombidium is, because they probably don't know what it is, Joe.
So Trombidium is a little parasite that exists on the common housefly. And it's red and it's round. And Herring did the proving. And it created this very, very brightly colored tincture. And it has many other very important keynotes that I want you to learn for yourself. but just consider it as a remedy that you might need one day in diarrhea. In fact, since studying these cases, I've never treated a case of actual dysentery, but using some of the keynotes, I have in fact treated successfully some very severe diarrhea cases, actually a case of colitis. So you learn this way by increasing your flexibility piecemeal with each case and learning what you can from philosophy, from repertory, from how it all hits the road together. And then you also exercise your faculty of knowing what is characteristic through the constant study of cases. It's something so neglected in today's homeopathic curriculum.
Once again, you did a wonderful job, and I'd like to know if you could come back and do some more of this with us, because I'm going to unmute the lines in just a second, but I'm sure that people will...
Oh, I'd love to. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I think it's very, very useful. Let me unmute the lines, and we can just, everyone can say goodbye and...